This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices. And on tonight's program, Tucker Duncan, the director and writer of Trans America. Philip Maynard from The Alley will talk about the ACT OUT series and currently features Culture Clash in America. We will have Christy Claxton live and performing in the studio, and Mike Harrison, facilitator of the Coming Out Support Group. All that and more after the BBC News, which is coming up. But first, you're listening to Queer Voices.
BBC News with Jonathan Wheatley. The authorities in Turkey have stepped up efforts to control an outbreak of the H5N1 strain of bird flu, which they say has infected at least 14 people and killed at least 2 people. Cases of human infection have already been confirmed in the capital Ankara and in 3 northern provinces, and the virus has been detected in poultry as far west as Istanbul. Sarah Rainsford reports from the eastern town of Doğubeyazıt, where the first cases in humans were confirmed last week.
With more cases of the H5N1 strain of the virus now confirmed in humans across the country, Turkish television has begun broadcasting a public health warning, giving a helpline and telling people how to protect themselves against infection. It's information that's sorely needed. Here in Doğubeyazıt, some locals say the cull of poultry has been dangerously slow. There's anger at what they see as a lack of resources here. But in an interview with the BBC in Doğubeyazıt, Turkey's health minister said there was no cause for panic.
Lithuania says it wants to delay the closure of a Soviet-era nuclear power station that it promised to shut down by 2009 as a condition for joining the European Union. The economy minister Kęstutis Daukšis says closing the Ignalina plant would leave Lithuania without a secure source of power, and said he wanted to negotiate with the EU to extend its life. Laura Sheeta reports from the region.
Closure of the Chernobyl-style Ignalina plant was one of the conditions for Lithuania to join the European Union. Half of it has already been closed, and the second unit is due to be shut down in 2009. But now the Lithuanian government says that that will leave them without a secure source of power, and they want to keep the plant open until they've got something to replace it with. Speaking at a news conference, the Lithuanian economy minister, Kęstutis Daukšis, said that the country needed to decide now whether to build another nuclear power plant to replace Ignalina.
At the start of his Senate confirmation hearings, President Bush's nominee for the U.S. Supreme Court, Samuel Alito, has insisted that he is impartial. Senators will begin questioning Judge Alito on Tuesday, with his views on the rights of the individual likely to be tested. James Kumarasamy reports from Washington.
Speaking without notes, Samuel Alito used his opening statement to make a pitch for his own impartiality. A judge, he said, can't have an agenda or a preferred outcome in a case. His views will be put to the test in the morning when senators get their first chance to cross-examine President Bush's nominee. Judging from their opening statement, Senate Democrats are planning a two-pronged attack, questioning the judge's views on both abortion and the limits of presidential power, something he's strongly defended in the past. With President Bush's secret surveillance program having the potential to reach the Supreme Court, the Democrats are keen to discover what position its newest member would take.
The United States says it's sending a high-level team to Ethiopia and Eritrea to try to solve their long-running border dispute. The U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton, presented the initiative to the U.N. Security Council. He said the team of diplomats and military officials would spend 30 days trying to resolve the disagreement over exactly where the border lies. You're listening to the news from the BBC. The Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas says he's received assurances from the United States that Arab residents of Jerusalem will be able to vote in the city, and that as a result the Palestinian parliamentary elections will take place as scheduled on the 25th of January. Mr. Abbas said earlier that the elections might be postponed if the Israelis prevented people in East Jerusalem from taking part. The head of the United Nations Nuclear Agency, Mohammed El-Baradei, has said that Iran's stated intention to resume its nuclear research could turn into a major crisis of confidence. Speaking to the BBC, Mr. El-Baradei urged Iran not to go ahead with plans to end its suspension of enrichment-related activities.
I hope our Iranian colleagues will understand that we need to create the condition to resume the dialogue to be able to resolve these issues in a diplomatic way and in a way which assures Iran of its right to use nuclear energy for peaceful purpose, but also, equally importantly, assure the international community that this is a program that is dedicated peacefully for peaceful purpose. So I would call on Iran to exercise maximum restraint. I would like the Iranian authorities to understand that the patience of the international community, including my own patience as head of the agency, is running out, and they should be able to draw their own conclusions.
A university professor and his wife have been arrested in the American city of Miami and charged with working as Cuban agents for more than two decades. The couple, Carlos and Elsa Alvarez, were remanded in custody. U.S. prosecutors say Mr. and Mrs. Alvarez reported to Havana about the Cuban exile community in the Miami area using shortwave radios, but they haven't been charged with a more serious offense of espionage. BBC News.
This is Queer Voices. And we are here, but Jack is not here.
And J.D. is not here, but Deborah Bell is.
And Jennifer Renee is.
And I'm Glenn Holt, and we also have...
John Buffington.
There you go. And he's here in the control room with me, and so... we're going to try to keep things together.
We're
going to
muddle through this somehow.
Oh, we certainly are.
Well, Jennifer is first up.
Yeah. Good evening. I'm Jennifer Renee. And our guest tonight is Tucker Duncan, who's the writer and director of the movie Transamerica, which opens on the January 20th here in Houston at the Angelique Theater. Now, Transamerica is a movie about the struggles of an estranged son and his parent. And the parent also happens to be a preoperative transsexual. It's written in the form and shown in the form of a road trip. Tucker, did I get that right?
You sort of got it right. First of all, what you didn't get right is my name. It's Duncan Tucker, not Tucker Duncan.
Sorry about that. And I just corrected everybody that to the wrong way.
No problem. And the movie is, as you described, although the subject of the movie is not transsexuality, it's a movie really ultimately about family and coming of age. It's sort of a character-driven comedy. It's ultimately a joyous movie. You laugh, you cry. I think you laugh a lot more than you cry, though.
Where did you get the idea? I mean, other than you may have read one of my journals...
You know, when I first started thinking about a movie I wanted to write and direct, I thought, what kind of stories do I love? And the answer was easy. I loved quest stories like Alice in Wonderland, The Wizard of Oz, Lord of the Rings. I thought, they're all stories about a hero on a hero's journey, coming of age. And I thought, how can I do that on a budget? And I was also thinking about the themes of family and growing up, then a woman I knew in Los Angeles a little bit told me that she was trans, and I had no idea. And I thought, wow, talk about taking a long journey to come of age. And the stories that she told me were so ripe for drama and comedy.
We have a lot of that in our community.
Yeah. You laugh and cry at the same time sometimes. It's very kind of wonderful. Her stories were, I think to survive such a big journey towards self-discovery and self-acceptance, you've got to have a sense of humor.
Oh, that's absolutely essential. And I know what you mean. At one moment, at least now, I can laugh at some of the things I had to cry about in the past.
Great. Well, you're a survivor.
Well, how did you get Felicia Huffman? What's the story behind her?
Well, I've loved Felicity Huffman since I first saw her in theater years ago. And when we got the $2.50 together to make the movie, the first thing my producer said was, we could make the movie on that budget, but anybody you've ever heard of, you can't afford. I said, let's go to Felicity anyway. And she loved the script and wanted to do it. And the next thing I knew, she said she had this pilot to shoot called Desperate Housewives. And I was going, oh, hell. You know, can we get the movie done before this darn pilot that'll probably never get picked up anyway? And we managed to get it done, but it was by the skin of our teeth, frankly. She was great. She's, you know, I just thought she was always a star waiting to happen. I thought she was one of those undiscovered talents. And she's an actress of the caliber of you know, Frances McDormand, Emma Thompson, Meryl Streep. She's a transformative genius.
Oh, absolutely. And I appreciated her before Desperate Housewives, but it was very convenient that it turned out to be a hit show for you.
I can't complain about that. And I'm thrilled with my other actors, too. I the kid who plays the son, 18-year-old at the time, Kevin Zegers, I almost didn't hire him because I thought he was too darn beautiful. He looks like, you know, the love child of Jared Leto and Ian Somerhalder, you know. Is that his name? Anyway, he's just the most ridiculously pretty kid I've ever met. But he ended up being such a great actor, so smart and sensitive, that I finally forgave him for his perfection.
Well, maybe it was the direction he was getting.
Okay, I'll accept that.
Well, who else is in the movie?
Well, Fionnuala Flanagan, another of my first choices, an amazing actress. She can spin on a dime from laughter to tears. She really pushes the boundaries of this turquoise-bedecked, monstrously funny but monstrously emotional and feeling mother of Bree, the trans woman main character. And Burt Young, Academy Award nominee from Rocky, plays her husband. Graham Greene, Academy Award nominee from Dances with Wolves, is in it. Elizabeth Pena, another fine actress. We were just so blessed to have creative people respond so enthusiastically to the script, and I got a cast together of real actors.
That's a wonderful group of people. Is there any interesting stories you can tell us about the making of it? There's got to be a few.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it was harder than I've ever worked, I'll tell you that. But it was, we laughed so much on set. I would often just call cut and then dissolve into giggles. And Felicity, even in the emotional scene, she was like, "Why are you laughing?" She just didn't understand how, I was laughing because I was just purely delighted. She didn't understand how multidimensional. I mean, just a character whose hopes and dreams and sense of humor and fears and innate dignity and determination and yet foolishness was all right there in front of me. There was one moment where when Toby the kid discovers, because he does not know, the story is that he's her son. She's on the verge of surgery. She never knew she fathered a son. She's on the verge of her final male-to-female surgery.
I'm familiar with that story.
And when she finds out she fathered a son, her therapist makes her confront her past before the therapist will sign legal permission for her to complete her gender transformation. And she reluctantly has to dip into her precious operation fund to bail this runaway street kid who's been living across country in the streets of New York out of jail. He's her worst nightmare. And she doesn't want anything to do with him. She's a very conservative and prim and proper woman. And she doesn't tell him who she is. And he jumps to the conclusion that she's some conservative church lady. And she lets him believe that. And so it's a voyage in disguise. So they're both lying to each other and manipulating each other and slowly forming a family.
Duncan, this is Deborah Bell.
Deborah.
Is it ever revealed in the course of the movie the true identity?
Well, there's two aspects of the true identity being that she's his parent.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to give it away, but let's just say that it ends on a very hopeful note and on a very, I hope it's the movie's ultimately joyous and life-affirming.
I've been incredibly impressed with the preparation that Felicity Huffman did for this role.
Yeah, she was. She worked really hard. She consulted with Calpurnia Adams and Andrea James, two trans women who own a company called Deep Stealth in L.A. And she transformed herself utterly. The walk, the talk, the look, and it was with very little makeup and very few prosthetics. No prosthetics, actually. Well, one.
Well, except one we've heard about, Andy, right?
One that was only visible in one scene.
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't she receive some additional training in San Francisco?
I think that she went to some conventions. We had 8 weeks of pre-production during which I was so darn busy. She had to be on her own road to do research. And then when we started working together is when we really hammered out the details of the character.
Well, the transformation, someone as attractive as she is, very feminine, she actually had to become a woman becoming a man.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, when I met trans women, did my research, one of the things I learned early on is that not every trans woman is necessarily, quote-unquote, readable. In fact, most trans women, in my experience, by the time they've completed their journey of electrolysis and hormone therapy, they don't look like guys in dresses. They, you know how hormone therapy changes your muscle mass and your fat distribution, and you put even a wonderful actor like Daniel Day-Lewis or somebody in a dress, and you have Daniel Day-Lewis in a dress, and it does not look like a trans woman, maybe at the very beginning of her journey. But I wrote about a character toward the end of her journey.
Oh, definitely. There's a lot that changes, and some of it is surprising along the way.
Yeah.
One other thing was I noticed that William H. Macy was your executive producer. How did he get involved?
Well, I met him during the course of shooting because he's married to Felicity, and then when I got a rough cut together, he and I had become quite friendly, and I was in L.A., and I showed Felicity and Bill and a couple of their friends the rough cut, and they really liked the movie, and Bill said, what can I do to help? And I was a genius. I said, I have no idea. I mentioned it to my producers, and they said, ask him to be an executive producer, and he's been fantastic. He's really helped us get into festivals and get Harvey Weinstein to pick up the movie, and consulted us at every turn, and if anybody out there ever needs an executive producer, I heartily recommend him.
Well, I'll remember that. Let me make a note. One other thing, awards. The talk of the show, there's all kinds of awards for some of the people in the movie itself.
Well, you know, right now, as we speak, there's an award show on television on the WB that's the Broadcast Critics Awards, and both Felicity for her role and as Best Actress and Dolly Parton for the original song she wrote for us for this movie. Another coup that we had that was just amazing that Dolly really responded to the movie and volunteered to write a song for us.
What's the name of that song?
It's called Travelin' Through, and it's nominated for a Golden Globe. It's nominated for this award tonight, nominated for a bunch of awards, and it's one of the best songs Dolly's done in her career.
Oh, that's great. That is a coup, because that was one of my questions. How did you get her? That sounds like, what'd you do, kidnapper?
I actually just, I had a conversation with my agents, because I have agents now, and I said, wouldn't this be great? There's one woman who's a symbol of life force and self-invention and family values, which is sort of what this movie's about. And you know, she's so high-spirited and good-spirited, and I'd love to get the movie to her desk. And they got it to her office, and a week later, her office called and said she loved it and would love to do a song for us. And she and I talked, and I told her the kind of song I wanted. And she, in great detail, and she really responded to my ideas. And about a week after that, they got in touch and said she'd written a song. And I said, gosh, I'm in Detroit at a festival for a day. And they said, and then I'm on to the next city. And they said, she's in Detroit for a concert for a day. And we ended up, I ended up going to her purple tour bus for 1 hour.
Oh, my.
Before her show and before my screening. And there was Dolly Parton and looking fantastic in black leather, and playing the guitar with her hair and her fingernails and everything, and just jumping up and down and making me taking my coat and making me a glass of water and taking care of me, and it was a great song, and I got so excited by it, and I was offering suggestions right there and then, and she ended up inviting me to Nashville to come with her to be in the studio to record it, and I got Dolly Parton singing African chants in the background of the song, which is I don't think you've ever heard before. It's great.
That is news. That is great. I look forward to hearing the song. Is there anything else you'd like me to ask that I haven't done so yet?
Well, I don't think so. I guess the main message we really want to get out there is this is a darn fun movie. It's like, I don't know what, like take mix up terms of endearment and the I don't know, just name some feel good, smart, funny comedies. A little bit of E2 Mama Tambien, that's not a comedy, but a little bit of that. It has a lot of heart and a lot of joy, and I just hope people see it, because we're trying to compete in a world of giants like King Kong and Narnia.
Well, right now there's just a slew of excellent movies out with excellent performances, so it, just to be in that company says a lot, and it sounds like fortune really was shining on you, and that this will be another movie like Brokeback Mountain that kind of dispels some myths and you know, helps mainstream be a little bit more accepting of the diversity that we have in this country.
And I think you're right. I mean, our numbers and the few screens that were open are fantastic. They've just been growing and growing and growing through word of mouth, and I've been hearing about people seeing it more than once. And by and large, what's wonderful is that our audience is not just gay people or queer people, but is largely, quote-unquote, mainstream straight people. Which is fantastic.
Well, I want to thank you for that. You know, being a T person is difficult enough, but for someone to, you know, reach and do what they think is a good story that just so happens to have a transsexual person in it, I honor you for that, and thank you from a lot of us in the community.
Duncan, thank you so much.
Duncan, thank you for being on Queer Voices. And that will be opening when, Jennifer?
It opens January 20th at the Angelique.
Angelica,
excuse me.
Downtown Houston.
Okay. And, Duncan, thank you again for spending some time with us tonight.
My pleasure. Have a great night.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye. And stay tuned for This Way Out.
sing in reverse, that is Boy George, from his 1995 album Cheapness and Beauty. This is Queer Voices.
I'm Josie Cotogio.
And I'm Rick Watts.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the 3 weeks ending January 7th, 2006. Same-gender couples began formalizing their relationships on December 19th under the United Kingdom's new Civil Partnership Act, which grants registered couples all the rights and obligations of marriage. A gay male couple where one partner was gravely ill was allowed to hold their ceremony before the new law officially took effect, but Gray Ann Close and Shannon Sickles were the first to tie the knot under the regular registration guidelines. As fundamentalist Christians and queer rights supporters yelled at each other outside, Close and Sickles were civilly united at City Hall in Belfast, Northern Ireland. The ceremonies began in Scotland the next day and in England and Wales the day after. Sir Elton John and longtime partner David Furnish were among the first to hold their ceremony on December 21st in the Royal Town Hall of Windsor, where Prince Charles and Camilla Parker Bowles were married. A star-studded reception followed the ceremony. Celebrants reportedly included Rod Stewart, Sharon Stone, Liz Hurley, Sting, Hugh Grant, and Victoria Beckham. Former U.S. President Bill Clinton offered his congratulations via satellite. Nearly 700 other U.K. same-gender couples formalized their relationships during the last 10 days of 2005.
The United Kingdom's new Civil Partnership Act has inspired Australian GLBT activists to demand that their government create a national civil union scheme for lesbian, gay, and unmarried hetero couples. Certification is important, said Australian Coalition for Equality spokesperson Kelly Pilgrim-Byrne. In areas as diverse as child custody, death benefits, passport applications, or during a medical emergency. However, Prime Minister John Howard quickly objected. I think marriage is for men and women, he said. That's the common understanding of marriage in the Judeo-Christian tradition, and I would be opposed to the recognition of civil unions.
According to gay journalist Rex Wagner, same-gender couples currently enjoy marriage equality in Belgium, Canada, the Netherlands, Spain, and the United States state of Massachusetts. South Africa's highest court last month legalized same-gender marriage but gave legislators 1 year to make the necessary legal adjustments. Partnership or civil union laws that grant registered same-gender couples some, most, or all the rights and obligations of marriage are now in force in Andorra, Denmark, Finland, France, Germany, Greenland, Iceland, Luxembourg, New Zealand, Norway, Slovenia, Sweden, Switzerland, the United Kingdom, the Australian state of Tasmania, the Brazilian state of Rio Grande do Sul, and the U.S. states of California, Connecticut, Hawaii, Maine, New Jersey, and Vermont.
The top court of the Cherokee Nation this week refused to strike down the marriage of a lesbian couple in what is seen as a landmark case in American Indian country. Cherokee tribal members Kathy Reynolds and Don McKinley married in May 2004 on Cherokee land in Oklahoma, a state that bans same-gender marriage. Because tribal law at the time did not explicitly exclude same-gender marriages, a tribal clerk gave them a wedding certificate. But tribal council members sued to have the marriage overturned, saying it would damage the reputation of the Cherokee Nation. The tribal council also amended the Cherokee marriage law to make it hetero-specific. The Judicial Appeals Tribunal of the Cherokee Nation, the tribe's highest court, rejected the request for an injunction against the marriage. Members of the tribal council, like private Cherokee citizens, must demonstrate a specific, particularized harm, the court ruled. In the present case, the council members failed to demonstrate the requisite harm. A lawyer for the tribal council said the tribe would no longer fight the marriage, but he noted that the U.S. federal government might have to recognize the marriage because of the sovereign status of Indian tribes, which could, in theory at least, make them eligible for federal tax benefits now denied to same-gender couples. But an attorney who represented Reynolds and McKinley called the federal obligation to recognize sovereign tribal marriage a very complicated area of the law.
As the new year began in the rest of the United States, Maine's anti-discrimination law took effect, banning bias based on sexual orientation in housing, employment, and public services. 55% of the state's voters in November rejected a ballot initiative sponsored by the Christian Civic League of Maine to repeal the measure. The new law gives the state Human Rights Commission the power to investigate complaints of discrimination against gays and lesbians.
A similar law also went into effect in Illinois, with additional protections for transgenders. Activists there had been lobbying for the measure's passage for more than 30 years. Rick Garcia of the queer advocacy group Equality Illinois celebrated the law finally becoming a reality, but wondered aloud, what in the hell took so long?
The Indianapolis, Indiana City Council in late December narrowly passed legislation banning discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity in the workplace and in housing. Business leaders there said they supported the protections in order to attract top talent to the city.
Also in late December, a state appeals court rejected a second attempt by a right-wing religious group to revoke domestic partner benefits in the beleaguered city of New Orleans, still recovering from the devastating physical and financial effects of August's Hurricane Katrina. The Court of Appeal for the Fourth Circuit of Louisiana upheld a 2004 lower court ruling that validated the legality of the city's domestic partnership registry and health benefits for the partners of city employees. This ruling is not only good for our clients, but good for the city of New Orleans, said Brian Chase, lead attorney for Lambda Legal, the gay advocacy group that worked on the case. It helps the city remain competitive in attracting and keeping gay and lesbian employees during these difficult times.
Activists in Taiwan are tired of waiting for the partnership rights their government promised them almost 5 years ago, so they've taken another tack. According to a late December report from Deutsche Presse Agentur, they plan to set up a country for lesbians and gay men called the Rainbow Republic. We refuse to accept the jurisdiction of the Taiwan government and will found our own country and government to protect our rights, Chan Ming Chu, Director General of the Taiwan Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Association, told reporters. The Rainbow Republic will have a parliament, a foreign ministry, and court to register gay marriages. The Republic will issue identity cards to Taiwan homosexuals and work toward promoting gay rights in Taiwan, said Chan. And the new country's logo? A rainbow flag, of course.
But authorities shut down the first Beijing Gay and Lesbian Culture Festival as it opened in mid-December, saying organizers had failed to secure permission to hold the events. The festival initially was scheduled for an arts complex in the Dashanzi area of Beijing. But the Public Security Bureau banned the event at that site, citing alleged safety standards violations. The organizing committee, some of whose members reported police surveillance, then moved the festival to the private on-off bar, which police raided as the festival kicked off. The officers reportedly ripped down signs and decorations, videotaped attendees, and closed the bar for a week. According to one of the organizers, the attitude towards homosexuality in China is to keep one eye open and another closed on the issue. You can do something related to the topic if the eye is closed to give you an acquiescent pass, and of course the same is true vice versa. The festival was to feature 3 days of exhibitions, seminars, plays, and movies. Organizers vowed to stage a second event this year.
A wall painting in an ancient Egyptian tomb showing an intimate embrace between two male manicurists to the pharaoh could be the first recorded depiction of an openly gay couple. That theory has emerged from an international conference at the University of Wales, which debated the significance of the unusual tomb. Archaeologists, who say it is extremely rare to find two men of equal status buried together, have been puzzled by the two men's relationship since the 4,000-year-old tomb was uncovered in 1964 on the west bank of the Nile. The couple is repeatedly depicted together, sometimes holding hands, sometimes with their arms around each other. In two instances, they're shown with their noses touching, the most intimate embrace permitted in Egyptian art of the time, and seen as a form of kissing. The suggestion that the two men, called Nian Khanum and Khanum Hotep, may have won social acceptance for their relationship raises the prospect that the tomb, restored by German archaeologists in the late 1970s and opened to the public in the 1990s, will become a gay honeymoon destination. However, it will have to literally be an underground destination because Egypt outlaws homosexual activity, and authorities notoriously targeted gay men for arrest there last year.
And finally, queer couples who plan to honeymoon at the Hotel Presidente Intercontinental in the Mexican beach resort of Los Cabos may want to think twice about staying there. Gerardo Iliud and Samir Habdu told police that security guards beat them up and threw them into the street with their luggage after spotting them kissing in the hotel pool in December. But when leftist deputies demanded an investigation into the incident in Congress this week, they were angrily shouted down by legislators from other parties who argued that the subject was unfit for discussion in the chamber. The couple has filed a criminal complaint against the hotel for assault and for stealing some of their belongings, and said they may file a complaint with Mexico's Human Rights Commission.
These last two stories disprove the lyrics of a popular song made famous in the movie Casablanca. Sometimes a kiss isn't just a kiss.
That's News Wrap for the 3 weeks ending January 7th, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written this week by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Josie Cotogio.
And I'm Rick Watts. This is Queer Voices.
This is Deborah Bell along with
Jennifer Renee.
And we have with us Philip Mayard from The Alley, and he's going to talk about the latest production, Culture Clash in America, and part of the Act Out series. Explain what the Act Out series is first.
Well, I'm back. Act Out at The Alley. It's our gay, lesbian patron group. We do a pre-show mixer for each of our Hubbard Stage productions. This will be the second one this year. And basically we do a party up in the Alley Theater Production Center up on the 18th floor overlooking downtown.
Great view from up there.
Beautiful view downtown. You get to meet the cast. Our wonderful sponsors, Hunan Downtown, provides a great spread of food. Budweiser provides plenty of beverages. And that starts up about 5:30. And then everybody goes downstairs and sees the show together.
And there is a discounted price, which we can't give the price on the air,
right.
And you can become a subscriber to the whole Act Out series. And this last time it was for Casa de Esperanza.
Exactly.
This time it's the AIDS Foundation Houston. How does that work?
Well, we really felt it was important for us to sort of give back to the community as well. If we wanted to get gay people to come and support us, we felt like we needed to support them as well. So each of our events, we have come up with a partnership. And for Culture Clash, we're partnering with AIDS Foundation to help them promote their AIDS walk. Basically, if you purchase your tickets, when you either call or you can go to the website, we'll give all that information. Tell them you're coming for the Act Out event and say AFH, AIDS Foundation. Basically, 20%, you're getting a 20% discount. And 10% of all of our ticketing money that comes in that night is going to go directly to the AIDS Foundation.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Right. And we're also hoping to get the Alley has had a AIDS walk team for about 10 years. One of a very visible group. The actors come, a lot of the people who work in the scene shop and the costume shop. And what we're hoping is that anyone that's coming to the show that maybe doesn't have a group to walk with will come and walk with the Alley team. So we're going to have people from AIDS Foundation at the party, signing people up, and we want everybody to come and join the actors and the artists and all of us to do the walk in March.
I really want to give kudos to that department, too, because I saw A Christmas Carol, and they must have had quite a time. With
the costume shop? A new production.
Everything with that was pretty incredible. It was a very different production.
Yeah. Well, Michael Wilson directed that, and of course he's gay, and he's very over the top, high British drag. Lots of We love Michael's production. Reprise that was the old Christmas Carol that we brought back, but with all new costumes, and we've got a lot of stuff going on at the Alley this year.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Now let's talk a little bit about Culture Clash. I'm real curious as why America is spelled with two C's.
Well, Culture Clash, CC. Culture Clash in America.
Clever.
Yeah, it's pretty
cutesy. It's actually Culture Clash in America.
Right.
And Culture Clash is a San Francisco-based, or would you call them performance artists?
I would say that sounds, performance arts sometimes sounds a little arty. These guys are
artsy-fartsy.
Yeah, these guys are comedians of the great, and they're great dramatic actors, but they're, I would say first and foremost, the best physical comedians probably you'll see at the Alley this season. They're really amazing actors, and the cool thing about Culture Clash is that they have conducted a series of interviews. This is a show that's developed over the last, I believe, 7 to 8 years, and they've conducted a series of interviews. Everyone from one of the best characters really is Adela, and she's a pre-operational transsexual in the Mission in San Francisco. They have a lesbian couple from Southern California, I believe. They have a man who's dealing with having had been molested by a priest in Boston. It's very serious stuff.
So these are real life stories.
These are real stories
that they're depicting,
that they're reenacting,
and then they kind of bring their own take on it, because I hear these guys are pretty wild.
All I can say is it's over the top. If and for gay people, and you know, I have to sell everything we do at the Alley, but from the very beginning, you know, Culture Clash came in for 3 performances last year, and brought the house down. People were yelling and I've never seen an audience react like that at the Alley. And so when we found out that we were going to be bringing them back this year for a full run, for a full 3-week run, we were all extremely excited. So this is something, it's, if gay people especially, if they're going to come to see a show at the Alley this season, this is absolutely it. They're really going
to
love
it. But of course, we want them to go see all of them.
We want them to see everything.
Especially taking part in the Act Out series.
Oh, we throw a good party, don't we?
Yes, it's excellent. And some wonderful people. I talked with Todd Waite at the last reception, and he was delightful. Mm-hmm. And it's fun to meet them and then see them in later productions.
Right.
There's something about this this series of interviews and the way they're presenting them that has a special Houston connection.
Absolutely. They continually work on the show, and they revise it and they change it depending on the area of the country they're in. During the fall, when the Hurricane Katrina evacuees were here, the guys from Culture Clash came into Houston and did a series of interviews with the evacuees and volunteers and people like that. And they're actually working those interviews into the show. I can give you one small little hint. That at one point, Sean Penn floats across the stage in a boat. So I do know that is happening, but the show has been different every night that they've done it already. It's still very much a work in progress, and so what you see one night may be different the next night. For Houstonians in particular, Culture Clash has sort of made a second home here. So I think they really love Houston, and there's a lot of close connections. A lot of their friends are here, and so if another connection, maybe if anyone came to see Cantinflas, which the Alley did last year and a little bit the year before, actually, Herbert Siguenza, who portrayed Cantinflas so amazingly, he's one of the Culture Clash guys. It's 3 guys: Herbert Siguenza, Richard Montoya, and Rick Salinas.
So tell us who that character is.
That character, Cantinflas?
Yes.
Cantinflas was a Mexican, sort of, they called him the Groucho Marx of Mexico. And the Alley has workshopped that production and sort of brought it to life as a co-production with the Yerba Buena Center in San Francisco. So, like I said, the Culture Clash guys are very much comfortable at the Alley, and you know, they're really excited about Act Out because this show has such a strong appeal to gay and lesbian audiences.
Yeah, and I imagine especially to the Latina community.
Absolutely.
Would have interest in this, because I know these guys really hold onto their Latin culture.
Absolutely.
and make that a unique part of their work. So from San Francisco to Houston, Culture Clash in America will be at 7:30 on Thursday, January 12th. The reception starting at 5:30. The performance at 7:30. Of course, it is in production through now.
I knew you were going to catch me on that one.
Well, you can go to the website at www.alleytheater.org, and that's theater with an R-E. And you can also call 713-228-9341, extension 346.
341, actually. If you just call 713-228-9341.
This card is lying to me, Philip.
If they want to buy tickets, just call the Alley and tell them that you're interested in Act Out.
And we have available for anyone who is interested, for us, we have two sets.
Mm-hmm.
Four tickets each to attend the Act Out series production of Culture Clash in America. So you can call 713-526-5738. And if you can tell us the home city of Culture Clash, then you can be a winner of the tickets. And this is the first two callers that can answer the question of what city does the Culture Clash originate from, and that's 713-526-5738 for four complimentary tickets to Culture Clash in America this Thursday night. And is there anything else that we should comment about?
Well, I just think it's really important for this particular event to support our friends at AIDS Foundation. They do such amazing work, and if you've never done the AIDS Walk, it's a really powerful experience, and it's always more fun to do these sorts of things with a group of people, and you couldn't ask for a more fun group of people than the people at the Alley. So, you know, come to the party on Thursday, show up around 5:30. We got great music, great food, and we got plenty of libations to keep the evening lively. You get to meet the cast.
And our phones are completely lit up now. Thank you very much.
So we have more than four listeners.
Oh, that's great.
We have at least five listeners, don't we?
I think we probably, I know the first person who called in had the correct answer, so we probably don't need for anybody else to call at this point.
Thank you, Glenn. And thank you again, Philip, for being with us Queer Voices to talk about Culture Clash in America. Now playing at the Alley Theater, and you can go to the website www.alleytheater.org for more information.
Thank you, Philip.
Thank you.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
If there's one thing I should have known by now, your hate has grown. If there are two things I couldn't see, one would be you, the other me. In all our glory, in all our glory, beautiful, tragic life. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. This love is here, this love won't die. No matter what you say, hurtful, hateful lies, the name is still the same, but the rules have all been changed. So come along, I'll stand aside, in all its glory, in all its glory. Love alone is what survives. Faces now, 'cause we're not leaving soon. This is love, this is true, this is me not being you. In all my glory, in all my glory, beautiful, wondrous life. Hallelujah.
queer voices.
You're not my judge or my jury. Your friends could find out. That's why you worried. Your image could be spared. Why don't I care? How can I be so unfair? My mind is twisted and you can't explain. How can I live this forsaken way? But I have a news flash for you. I'm never, never, never gonna choose. Cause it's not contagious, just a little outrageous for you. But it doesn't mean I have any less of a right to be who I am. And I demand to be free from your judgment. Give me the respect. Don't like what I do. Dignity isn't measured by you. The homophobic blues. So what am I supposed to do about you? I thought I made it clear. I'm not gonna cry or shed a tear. You say I'm always flaunting it, but I'm not gonna take that long, long trip. I'll live my life as I decide. I'm never, never, never gonna hide. I thought it was crazy. Just a little outrageous for you. But it doesn't mean I have any less of a right to be who I am. And I demand to be free from your judgment. Give me the respect. Don't like what I do. Dignity isn't measured by you. Homophobic blues, a wife, two kids, and a mortgage too. You're threatened by difference outside your picket fence. You can't understand why I'm not on the defense. You say I'm always flaunting it, exposing your family to all this shit. Well, you don't want them to see or know who I am. Come on, brother, let's change this plan. You're just like me. Oh, can't you see? We strive every day for a little deal. Just a little outrageous for you. But it doesn't mean I have any less of a right to be who I am. And I demand to be free from your judgment. Give me the respect. Don't like what I do. Dignity isn't measured by you. Well, you don't like what I do. Dignity isn't measured by you.
Three Marys and their homophobic blues, and that's from one of those special JD collections that we have. Even though JD isn't here tonight, of course, we still have some of his music because he's kind enough to leave that with us. And before that, we heard Hallelujah from Martine Locke, who is an Australian living in San Francisco, and she is going to be one of the performers April 28th at the Diva House Concert Series at the GLBT Center on Montrose, and is also going to be at the Houston International Festival on the 29th of April. Deborah.
Well, we have a lot of things going on, as usual, in the community. And the Diva House Concerts is a new series of house concerts designed to feature female artists. And some of them may be somewhat well-known, and some of them are just emerging artists. And we're very excited about, I'm one of the co-founders of the group, and so we're really excited about doing that. I only recently found out that there are quite a few venues already in Houston doing house concerts, and each of them tend to have their own focus. So hopefully this will be a unique little area to focus on, and a chance for women in the community together, and men are welcome to attend the performances. And the first one will be Friday the 13th. Which will also be a celebration of my 56th birthday, and the title of it is Sweet Savage Chocolate.
I was going to say, you have a hand in organizing these things, right?
Yes, I do. And
so plug yourself shamelessly.
Yes. Well, there's... we've had a few Sweet Savage Chocolate gatherings over the year, and they tend to be very popular because people... they throw out their New Year's resolution to lose weight and go on a feeding frenzy because the people bring me chocolate, but then I share it. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot of fun. But
and where's my invitation?
If they give it to you,
didn't I send
calories.
It to you?
No,
it,
actually.
It was announced in Outsmart, and I do believe if you would read your email that you were sent an invitation. We've been talking about it so long, I'm assuming that everybody on Earth knows about it. I'm only hoping that the GLBT Community Center can hold everyone. But two things. One, to come celebrate my birthday, and then the other, into each chocolate. And then also because we're going to have a very special performer for this concert, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the program, because that performer, Christy Claxton, is actually here live in the studio.
I feel so special.
You are special.
You are special. You did fix my voice, right? That spell
right,
was to last
right.
more than a week.
She was complaining about the cedar near her home out in the country, and it was causing her to cough, and her voice was getting kind of froggy, and I told her I did an incantation to alleviate the cedar allergy, and hopefully it will last longer than, you know.
At least through Friday.
Yeah.
She said I did an incantation, and then I coughed real hard.
Oh.
And it went away.
There you go.
Good.
And I was curious.
Curious.
It's done.
I have the Darth Vader processor.
That's it. I'm going to sing Edith Piaf songs.
Would you? French. I love that.
Oh,
so, Jennifer, you said you had a little
had a
comment to make?
Yeah, well, I had a couple of things. One, those of you who got your voter registration card, take them out. Look at them. They may not be in effect. The name where it is at the top where it says the date that they're good should be 2006, not 2005. The county said a oops, and they're rescinding some of them. Also, if you haven't registered to vote, get out and register to vote. That's my sort of PSA.
Okay. Mine says from January 1st of 06 through December 31st of 07.
Yours and is okay.
And it's bright yellow if
bright
you're in
yellow.
Harris County.
Is
I don't
that
know.
Canary yellow?
Okay. So I'm good.
You're
I'm
good.
Such a dyke. I have to look in my little...
She's going
mine.
Through, you know, all the
here
little
it is.
Pieces. All right.
What does it say?
January 1st, 06 to 12/31.
You got
07.
It. Yours is
but
good.
You're not in Harris County, are you?
No.
You're
but
from what county?
I'm from Fayette County.
Fayette County.
They probably got it right the first time. So another thing I want to say, you know, coming up in April is the Unity Banquet, and which the proceeds from the banquet go to the youth scholarship that we have and help kids go through school.
What date in April?
It's the 13th and 14th. You can get tickets.
2 days?
You really will. No, the reception is on Friday, and then the banquet is on Saturday. You can get your tickets from Ticketweb online. How about that?
Wow.
You know, 21st century stuff here. And try to join. It's the one of the largest long-running banquets of the GLBT community, transgender community, for years.
And you're the co-chair?
No, I am the secretary of the Transgendered Unity Committee, yes.
Okay. And so several folks worked to put that on.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The number of people. And if you want to be a sponsor, too, you can also...
All kinds of opportunities.
You can go to our website, www.htuc.org. And you can find out more information.
All right. Well, you're listening to Queer Voices.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Valinsky, Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, and Glenn Holt. And the rest of the Queer Voices crew.
I'm glad to be gay, to sing if you're happy. This way.
And I just have this quick programming announcement. For the rest of the week, the Pacifica Radio Network presents gavel-to-gavel coverage of the Samuel Alito Supreme Court hearings. Now, of course, Samuel Alito's nomination to the court has drawn a lot of scrutiny, and the hearings are expected to be among the most important for the Supreme Court in over a generation. The hearings start at 10 a.m. and run until 5:30 p.m., and senators, followed by Alito, will make opening statements, and you'll hear analysis and more. And the hearings continue all week. They started today, and they continue all week, and they preempt regular programming here on the station from 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. So all KPFT programming during these hours is preempted. The 9 a.m. edition of Democracy Now! Will be preempted during the week. However, you can tune in at 6 p.m. for the evening broadcast of the same show. For over 50 years, Pacifica has brought you uncut coverage of hearings and other official business of interest of public education and open government. And, of course, we welcome you to tune in.
Best Love Girl is right here in the KPFT studios.
Oh, thank you.
Jennifer!
You mean her?
I wasn't talking about you this time. I'm talking about Christy Claxton. And many of our listeners might already be familiar with Christy's work. For one reason is because J.D. is very fond of her, and he's played her music. And I think he told me that you were the first interview that he ever did when he got into doing queer music.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
So that's pretty, you know, because he's won awards and everything. So, he, you know, that's pretty good that you...
I was the first.
Yeah.
I hope I was gentle on it.
You must have been, because he kept doing it. And what a treasure he is. And that reminds me, speaking of treasures, I want to thank John Buffington tonight for helping us out in the studio. It just is invaluable to have volunteers that can help with the flow of things. And especially since we're kind of winging it because we're short a few of our usual...
So nice
and cute, but we're short of a few of our usual crew. So Christy Claxton that was just her on the song "Best Love Girl," and that was on your first album.
That was
or CD. Do you even say album anymore?
I say album. I sometimes say record.
Record.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was on Out of Nowhere, but actually what we were listening to was a dance remix, which everybody sort of guffawed at, but it, like, I think it was like KPFT's Queer Song of the Year or something in 2002 or whatever, so I don't laugh at it.
Don't laugh at it. It was fun. I like that song. It has a lot of good energy. And, Christy, you do something... you're one of the most altruistic people that I know, because not only do you play your music and promote music and live music in Texas and Texas music around the world, but you gather in other performers and artists and give them showcased. You did several folks last year at the International Festival, and I think you're working to do that again for this April.
Yes, yes.
But... Not your first album, but you did a project called Peace from the Porch.
I did.
And anyone that knows anything about Christy is she lives out in the country. She has this big, wide porch. And I guess, is the property called Bear Creek?
Yes, I call it Bear Creek Camp because the other name had a profane word in it, and I didn't think that the tax people would go for that. So it is Bear Creek Camp. And we did Bear Creek concerts.
You can tell me later after the show what the word is.
But it's a 50-cent cusser, so I can't.
I see. And there's this big wide porch, and people actually sit on the porch and strum their guitars.
We invited artists from all over the country and world to come out and perform, and I really called it the rest of the story. In other words, there are those who can always get a house concert gig. They can always get a gig over at Anderson Fair or Mucky Duck. But there are really fabulous artists like Martine Locke who can't get arrested.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to start presenting them just... being the kind, you know, the person that I am, it was sort of a middle finger to the establishment, but then it really took off because these guys really are great. And then in 2004, I did a compilation CD, Peace from the Porch, Volume 1, because my salutation is always Peace from the Porch. And we did this compilation CD of artists that had played out at Bear Creek and donated the money to the American Cancer Society, and we won a Texas Music Award.
Wow.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, for the project. And we were invited to the International Festival, so we presented 16 acts there. And I've been invited back, so I'll be doing it in April again with 16 acts again and Volume 2. And Volume 2, Peace from the Porch Volume 2, is going to benefit agencies that support victims of child abuse and domestic violence.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So, and now, if I understand this right, you yourself do not perform on Peace from the Porch?
Not on Volume 2. I did on Volume 1. I had my Bear Creek Ensemble.
That just doesn't seem right somehow, Christy.
Do you know that tonight, this is the first time in quite some time that I've even picked this thing up.
This thing being her guitar.
My guitar, yeah. I just don't. I really, you know, sort of turned that corner in with a Peace from the Porch project, and I love finding those great artists and promoting them. Volume 2 is a little bit more high volume. Since Volume 1 did so well, it was pretty easy just to call people and ask if they want to help out, because I wanted music that would bring attention to the project and raise the money for the agencies.
Now, long-time listeners to KPFT, those of us who remember the days of Breakthrough, which was played what was known as women's music, also, people that are familiar with JD's segment of Queer Voices and Queer Music Heritage will be familiar with some of the artists that you're going to be bringing to the International Festival. Just tick off a few of the names.
The International Festival. Now, let me talk about the album, because the one that notably would be Tret Fury. But at this time, she won't be coming, I think, scheduling conflicts to the International Festival. However, Patrice Pike, Sister Seven, people may know her from Sister Seven or Little Sister. Erika Luckett, Martine Locke will be there. For you hardcore folkies, the great, great Eric Taylor and Shake Russell will be there. Natalia Zuckerman, who is another great artist coming up the ranks. She's a wonderful, wonderful sort of fusion jazz country, if you can imagine.
Hmm.
Just great stuff. So, and then a few locals, Smythe and Taylor, T.C. Smythe, who's a big champion here at KPFT, and Gary Taylor will be there. I'm doing this off the top of my head.
And Ruthie Foster.
Ruthie Foster won't be at the International Festival. She will be in Oregon, but that's a great segue, because what I did with Volume 2 is I needed a money song, something that would really make radio spin it so we could get some attention for the project. So I started with Patrice, and I said, I need a money song. If I pay for the studio, will you and Ruthie go into the studio and record a tune for me together? You know, well, of course. I mean, these are two of the great, great, powerful Texas women's voices. So then I contacted Ruthie, and she said absolutely. And I thought, well, hell, I'm on a roll. I said the H word, but that was good. That was good for me. It was just a little cuss word. It's not one of the edit words. Not
right.
One of the FCC fine words. Okay. I use those too, but I'll try not to.
I do too.
I save those for Jimmy. I save those for Jimmy's show. I went ahead and contacted Erika Luckett, who's such an amazing world artist. She has been on two lists as one of the 100 most influential women in 2005. She's so phenomenal. So I contacted Erika to come in and do the guitar work. And then the wonderful jazz band here in Houston, Yasheed, which is the rhythm section, Samantha Bank and Tanya Richardson, to come in, and that was my ensemble 2006. We went to Austin and we recorded this amazing single, and we'll debut it tonight. We'll finish up the segment with that tune, because it's just great. It's just to have even that group on one recording is a real coup for this project.
So I should say that in addition to bringing me chocolate, I am asking people to bring a donation to give to Peace from the Porch Volume 2 to help Christy with her project. And so she's going to be performing for us. And so it'll be a really fun evening. And if you want more information about Christy, her music, her work, and her world vision, which I just think is wonderful, and the Sweet Savage Chocolate, you can go to www.christyclaxton.com. And, well, Christy, why don't you treat us now with a live performance? And what is this song?
You know, I really thought about this, and I decided I'm not going to do anything off of Out of Nowhere. I'm going way back to my more folky, rocky days instead of that. What was that? Sort of a twangy album, wasn't it? Twangy thing.
Some people like twang.
Some people like twang, amazingly. But this is a tune off of a record called I Feel Better that I did in, I think it was 97, with a group called the Watsons, and we used to play a lot here. She says, yeah, I know them. And we did do irreverent things.
They all heard me shaking my head up and down.
Mm-hmm. And this is the title track from I Feel Better. It's called Beautiful Loser, and it's I never play it anymore, so I thought it'd be fun to see if I don't blow this thing away here. It doesn't pay to be kind. Love's a state of mind. Be forgotten. Strange hands in the night. Dream lovers in my sleep. Without faces. Don't lose that thought, she says. It's all you have, she says. Really very lucky. When you forget is all you ever really had. Makes me feel better. Then there's a girl with a smile. I close my eyes and see that smile. I can't forget it. I'm reminded I'm alone. I can't forget it, I'm alone. Touch that smile. You rebound now, she says. That's not so bad, she says. You're moving very quickly. All you ever really had, yeah. Oh, oh. And that makes me feel better. You're such a graceful loser. Oh, oh. And that makes me feel better.
I think that song was written for me. Thank you, Christy Claxton. Again, this Friday night, Sweet Savage Chocolate, Christy Claxton, Peace from the Porch. Go to her website, www.christyclaxton.com. And Peace from the Porch, Volume 2, this cut is called
Little Red Recorder. It features Patrice Pike, Ruthie Foster, Etika Luckett, Samantha Banks, and Tanya Richardson.
never to look back. Happy girls go to lunch. The conversation won't mean much as they hide the things they hold dear in their hearts, afraid to share.
Christy Claxon and the Bear Creek Ensemble with their selection Little Red Recorder from the album Peace from the Porch, Volume 2. And that's Peace spelled P-E-A-C-E. This is Queer Voices.
Listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine brought to you by you. Your charitable donations keep this program on the air. We've produced some special CDs to say thank you to our supporters, featuring queer history, reviews of LGBT music, and behind-the-scenes looks at relevant movies and TV shows. You can also now get CDs of our regular program by subscription, and be sure you never miss a week of This Way Out. For all the details, please visit our website at thiswayout.org. You can also demonstrate your solidarity by taking part in an online benefit auction. Look for the This Way Out area at alternabid.com. Again, to find out more about special CD thank you gifts, subscriptions, and the auction, please do log on to thiswayout.org, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA.
And now it's time for another special feature.
Southern California activist and radio producer David Fradkin, delighted in exploring the queer corners of mid-20th century music, movies, and comedy recordings. He shared some of his collection with Los Angeles radio listeners in the early 1980s, and it's long past time to bring his demented discoveries to a global audience. In an obvious homage to a certain radio doctor, David took on the persona of Nurse Pimento, whose bedside manner was
stranger than straight. Hi, I'm Nurse Pimento.
We are Tough You Bet, filled with college debt. Bring him on Detroit. D-I-D-I-D-I.
I'm a private duty nurse specializing in bringing sunshine and happiness into your living room, dining room, or whatever.
As I live and breathe, a fairy. Cool it, Jiminy.
Just for you, I come bearing strange and wonderful medicines, off-the-wall tongue-in-cheek music and performances with gay references. These medications go down quite easily, and according to the indications on the labels, they are guaranteed to maybe even outrage.
I never said a guy who wears glasses is a queer. A guy who wears glasses is a four-eyes. A guy who is a fag is a queer.
So just sit back and relax as we enter the world of Stranger Than Straight.
I walk and talk like a queen. Man, that's just what I mean.
There have been suggestive hints all through our cinematic history in regard to homosexuality. Most have been in a comedic sense. In Some Like It Hot, Jack Lemmon's revelation to Joey Brown that they couldn't get married because he was a man brought on a deadpan response. Well, nobody's perfect. Other stars have appeared in films and drag. Who can forget Marlena Dietrich in A Top Hat and Tail singing a love song to Lily Marlene? Or Ray Bolger seducing college professors in Charlie's Aunt? Or Stan and Ollie playing each other's wives? Well, as far as Groucho Marx was concerned, he was warned.
Oh, I got started in the show business. I saw an ad in the Morning World, which doesn't exist anymore. And hardly do I. The ad said boy wanted to sing. I ran all the way to 93rd Street, where I lived then, to 33rd Street, and ran up five flights of stairs, and knocked on the door, and a man came to the door wearing a woman's outfit. Not entirely, just lipstick. And I realized that that was the profession that I wanted to enter.
Keep it gay, keep it light, keep it fresh, keep it fair. Let it bloom every night, give it room, give it air.
Keep your love a lovely dream and never wake it. Make it happy and be happy as you make it. Let it sing like a nightingale in May. Keep it gay, keep it free, or you'll frighten it away. Take it easy and enjoy it while you take it.
Keep it gay, keep it gay, keep it gay.
In Laurel and Hardy's famous Babes in Toyland, made in 1936, Stan disguises himself as Little Bo Peep in order to marry Silas Barnaby on the condition that if Bo Peep marries him, he will tear up Mother Peep's mortgage. The interesting element in this is not the surprise wedding.
Now, you may kiss the bride.
But dealing with the reality of the situation after the fact.
Well, goodbye and good luck.
What do you mean, goodbye?
I'm not going with you.
Why, no.
You have to stay here with Barnaby. You're married to him.
I don't want to stay here with him.
Why?
I don't love him. Oh. If he ever sees me.
Amazing what a person could do with a record collection and a good ear for innuendos. Find a song, a soundtrack, or a comedy album, and you'll be shocked at what you can come up with.
The girl that I marry will have to be as soft and as pink as a nursery.
Filmography will have on its list a 1943 MGM musical called Girl Crazy. The entry will include the film's famous numbers, I Got Rhythm and Bidin' My Time, sung by Judy Garland. What you probably won't find on the entry is a song sung by Mickey Rooney. Nurse Pimento, of course, would never let such a thing escape his notice.
Found a silver spoon in my mouth. I had a barber just to curl my hair. If winter came, the mater carried me to the south. The point is that I had the best of care. Women and head waiters fawned on me. Life was just a bore till it dawned on me that if I'd ever want to be a man amongst men, I'd have to be manhandled now and then. Treat me rough, muss my hair. Don't you dare to handle me with care. I'm no innocent child, baby. Keep on treating me wild. Treat me rough, pinch my cheek. Kiss and hug and squeeze me till I'm weak. I've been pampered enough, baby. So keep on treating me.
Or even Carl Reiner interviewing Mel Brooks, the 2,000-year-old man.
I'm always fascinated when you tell us personal things about the great historical figures. One intrigues me, General Custer.
A fag.
Now, wait a minute. Now, just a moment.
I was a fag.
No, we're talking about General Custer. He was a general.
Hey, I was there, Charlie.
You see anything that... The general could be a fag?
He's a fag.
General's a fag?
All generals.
All generals? Now, just a moment. That is, are you trying to prove a psychiatric point?
I'm saying a simple truth. What's so hard
well,
to...
Well, no, you say not all generals.
Take a
maybe
shot.
One, maybe, but not all generals.
Name the generals, I'll tell
George
you.
George Washington.
A fag, the biggest.
General Eisenhower.
A fag.
General Cornwallis.
A fag.
General Patton.
A big fag.
Now, just how could you explain that, sir? None of these men seem... We haven't any history of them being homosexual.
Hey, wait a minute. Hold up. Hold on, pal. I didn't say homosexual.
No, you said
well, don't get me in trouble. I don't want to get...
You said these generals were fags.
Yes, Federal Army generals. I didn't mean... No, I don't want to take the time on the record to... I've shortened things.
Do you know any homosexuals?
Maybe Custer, but I don't want to go... You know.
There were...
Could have been. He had long hair and he liked nice horses. Who knows?
This section is devoted to our boys. First, a song to all our boys over there.
This is a song titled The Military Lovers. Do you love me as much as I love you? As much as I love you. Do you love me as much as I love you? As much as I love you. As I love you, as much as I love you. Dum-da-dum-dum. Love me as much as I love you.
Tommy Smothers singing The Military Lovers. Now, Martin Mull tells us what it's really like aboard a Navy ship.
Men. It's great to be on a ship with men and sail across the sea. Oh, we don't know where we'll land or when. It's great to be with men.
It's great to be with men.
Cause men can sweat and men can stink and no one seems to care. Oh, we'll throw the dishes in the sink and clog the drain with hair. Oh,
clog the drain with hair. Oh, men. It's a ship all filled with men. So batten down the ladies' room. There's no one here but men.
There's men above, there's men below, there's men down in the galley. There's Bush
and Fife and Bush
and Biff and one guy we call Sally.
And one guy we call Sally. Men. It's a ship all filled with men. You'll never have to lift the seat. There's no one here but men.
We're men and friends until the end, and none of us are sissies. At night we sleep in separate beds and blow each other kisses.
And blow each other kisses. Men. It's a ship all filled with men. So throw your rubbers overboard. There's no one here but men.
And now, dedicated to our boys in politics, an excerpt from the Watergate hearings, courtesy of the National Lampoon.
Now, Mr. Hunt, we have evidence here that you had an intimate relationship with the unsuccessful assassin of Governor George Wallace, Mr. Arthur Bremmer.
Look, I don't know how intimate it was. We slept together a couple times.
All right, now, just a minute here.
No big deal.
From the Continental Bat House in New York City, it's Bing Crosby with Paul Whiteman and his orchestra. For their first number this evening, Paul and the gang give us their rendition of Oscar Levant's latest hit, Gay Love.
A silvery moon finds me alone tonight with only thoughts of you. The little stars are twinkling oh so bright, no wonder I am blue. Like a ray of sun with glaring light, you have brought the love that's burning. The happy spell of you now holds me tight, for you I keep on yearning. Yay, love, with your heart I will play, love, until you come my way, love. I'll be waiting for you. Your love is the kind I adore, love. Something worth living for, love. Every word, dear, is true. Your magic arms are always haunting, wanting you near to me. Your fiery eyes are so entrancing, glancing, romancing, yay, love. Won't you promise and say, love, you will be mine someday, love, and that you love me
Feeling better now? I'm so glad. Oh, my, I've forgotten all about the time. My shift is over now, but I'm sure you're in good enough shape to take care of yourself. Remember, drink plenty of liquids and don't forget to take your vitamins. Oh, and we should thank the people who are the active ingredients in our miracle cure, Margaret Fowler and Joan Sprague, for their technical assistance. And the inert ingredients should get equal time, so I'd like to thank David Fradkin for just being me. This is Nurse Pimento. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing my song. When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along.
But wait, Nurse Pimento is planning a follow-up visit, just to be sure everyone's still doing okay, bringing the poignant words of Anne Frank.
I remember that once when I slept with a girlfriend, I had a strong desire to kiss her, and that I did do so.
A ditty by Danny Kaye.
Come out, listen on the air. Up there, down there, carries everywhere.
The très amusant Noel Coward.
You know, everyone's here.
correctly gay. Nobody cares what people say.
And a story in music and words from Bessie Smith and her niece Ruby.
Bessie and all of us went to the party. Some woman had a house there, a buffet flat.
There's a lady in our neighborhood who runs a buffet flat.
It's the concluding dose of
Stranger Than Straight.
Right.
Next time on This Way Out. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Josie Catoccio, Rick Watts, Rex Walkner, and Graham Underhill contributed program material. David Fradkin was Stranger Than Straight, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep us on the air and choose from some very special queer history and culture CDs that you can own as our thanks. To sign up for our weekly email program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WOJX Northampton, Massachusetts, KSOW Cottage Grove, Oregon, 7LTN Launceston, Tasmania, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Now imagine that. This Way Out is heard in Tasmania, as well as right here in Houston on KPFT. And you can listen online at www.kpft.org. And shows are archived, so if you've missed an evening, you can check the website and listen up.
And you can listen to us over and over again.
Yes. And also, J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage website, especially if you're interested in the music. And, oh, thank you, Christy Claxton, for that wonderful music you had for us tonight.
That was great.
It really was. She's so sweet. And like I said, she has this incredible world vision. Not too much unlike the world vision they have at the Montrose Counseling Center.
Oh, you are good with the segue.
Wasn't that good?
Yes.
And that, of course, are not for kids.
That is, of course, our friend Sally Huffer, who's the community project specialist. She is a specialist. Do not try this at home. And Mike Harrison, Ph.D., can I say Dr. Harrison?
Yes, you may.
It just makes sense. We have with us Dr. Harrison, the facilitator of the Coming Out Support Group that the Montrose Counseling Center is. Now, they've been doing this a while. They had a coming out support group?
They've done this for the past several years, and we try to do it twice a year, and we're having the new one starting up in a few weeks.
And what is it, you know, what, you're 17, 18, and you're just coming out? Is that who it's for?
Well, actually, the program is set up for anybody, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people who are thinking about coming out, in the middle of the coming out process. It's sort of an open-ended sort of discussion about what coming out is all about.
And is each session different, or is there some kind of agenda, some kind of program involved?
There is a program. It's 9 weeks. Every week is going to be covering a different topic about the coming out process.
Such as?
Well, like coming out to family, coming out to friends, dealing with living in a heterosexist world and being gay, and how to go about reconciling that.
Mm-hmm. And those of us who have been out for 20 years or more, such as myself, we know that every new person we meet or every new situation we are in is an opportunity to once again come out. And there are times when you have to consider whether being out is a safe thing to do or not.
That's very true.
Unfortunately. So you provide people just an opportunity to talk about it, or you give them some concrete advice about things they can do?
Actually, we're doing both. The format of each meeting is going to be, part of it's going to be educational in a small group format where we're going to sort of present the information, and then we're going to allow people to sit around and talk about their own experiences and how they might relate to that information. They can bring in what's going on in their own lives, talk about questions or problems that they may have. But again, each week is going to be a little psychoeducational and a little bit experiential.
Do you sense that coming out for different groups, the lesbians as opposed to the gay, the bisexual, transgender, are they different in the process of coming out?
I think the coming out process is probably different for every human being in some respect or another, whether they're gay, whether they're bisexual, transgendered, lesbian. It's going to be a little unique, but also a little bit individual.
Okay, and we don't like to make assumptions, but I'm asking, are you gay?
Yes.
Okay. So, in your own coming out, what was that like?
Well, it was an interesting process. I was married. I have two children. And got divorced and was a single father and raising two children and dealing with coming out all at the same time.
Oh, that's,
so it was a, it was a, an interesting time in my life.
Bless
so
your
were
heart.
You aware of your orientation prior to the divorce?
You know, awareness. I don't really think I was aware. No, it was a process of coming to that awareness, coming to terms with it, accepting it within myself.
Mm-hmm. I myself was married and had two children when I came out. But I knew. I mean, in fact, I tell people I identify as bisexual because I have attraction to both men and women, although I live my life as a lesbian. That is a little bit different. Sometimes we think about children coming out to parents, but how about being a parent coming out to your child?
That's right, and that's a very interesting process, too, because you have to...
Or coming out to your spouse, which is...
Excuse me, dear, I'm going to be a woman now.
Yeah, the coming out for transgendered people is... A biggie.
That's right. Very, very important process.
And is there an opportunity within the group to address those discussions?
Most definitely. And you brought up a point a minute ago, and that is coming out to your spouse. I mean, our group is, you know, when we talk about coming out to your family, we don't just mean your parents or your children. I mean, part of it, you know, could also be for people who are coming out to their spouse and learning to deal with that, and how are they going to do that, you know, in a safe way. And that's one of the things that we really stress, is that coming out has to be done in a very safe way.
Well, part of it is the acceptance and coming out to yourself.
That's,
I mean, your first coming out is when you say, I identify as gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender.
That's right. And that's a very difficult step. Very difficult step for a lot of people.
But every journey begins with but a single step.
And don't stumble.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what the support group really is about, is to help people not stumble along that path.
And to help minimize the stumbles. I think everyone's going to stumble somewhere along the line. And it's to sort of provide a safe, structured support group to help people with this process. And a lot of people, you know, they're trying to decide, is this the right time in their life to come out? And there's, you know, a lot of things that go into that consideration.
Now, do you have to be of a certain age to participate?
No, you don't. It's open to anyone who wants to come, and you do not have to be a client of the Montrose Counseling Center either. It's open to the general public.
And is there a fee involved?
It is a donation-requested group.
Okay.
So we will take your money, but we're not requiring you to pay to come.
Right. So anyone who has that need to work on coming out issues is welcome to participate, regardless of their ability to pay.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
When do you hold it? When are the sessions?
The group begins at 6 p.m., and it's going to be on Thursday nights. It's going to run about an hour and 45 minutes, so from 6 to 7:45. The format, again, the first hour will be sort of educational, then we'll take a break, and then come back and sit around and sort of process and talk about people's experiences.
And we're not starting this coming Thursday, but the following Thursday on January 19th.
That's correct, the 19th.
So it'll run for 9 weeks, did you say?
Yes, it runs starting January 19th through March the 16th.
Well, what if I can't make it on the 19th?
Then you can come on the following week. Every week will be different, and you don't have to attend all 9 sessions. Of course, you'll get the most benefit if you do, but you can come midway through and attend the sessions that you like. There's going to be an agenda passed out the first session so you can kind of see what's going to be covered each week.
So say I started in the middle of it, then the next time you do a group, I could go back and do the ones I didn't do before?
Certainly.
Okay. You could even go to the ones that you went to before.
Okay.
You know, I mean, every time you're going to get a different mix of people, and so the experiences that are brought to the group are going to be completely different.
Good point.
One of the things, you know, even here in this small group at the table, we were talking about, you had said that you had always known, and Michael said that, you know, he didn't have the awareness. Coming out to yourself is one thing, but we always talk about, you know, when you come out to yourself and then you come out to others, you know, that's an ongoing process. With every person that comes into our life and every time, you know, we cross paths with another person, whether that's a new employer, I mean, certainly we know there are a lot of young people who are out at school, but that doesn't mean that they're out at home with their family. And we talk to the Hatch kids on a regular basis about, you know, the risks involved in coming out.
What's Hatch?
Hatch is our drop-in youth program through Montrose Counseling Center for youth between the ages of 13 and 20, and it's held every Friday and Sunday evening. There's an hour of program, there's an hour of socializing, and then an hour of small groups for the youth to get together and talk about whatever issues they're facing. So it's
so they probably deal with coming out.
They deal with it
at Hatch.
Yeah, on a regular basis. Yeah. But the other things that, you know, you might want to think about is, you know, okay, if you've made that decision to come out to your family, now when am I going to do it? Am I going to do it on Mother's Day? Am I going to do it when the families are on the table at the holidays? I mean, you know,
well, according
July.
To Will and Grace, that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah,
you're supposed to wait till the
too.
Big holiday.
Yeah,
right. Well, everybody is gathered together.
Yeah.
But also realize that the people that you're coming out to, especially when it's family members, that they may have their period of adjustment. And I know a lot of my good friends over at PFLAG talk about how the parents themselves need to adjust into their own coming out period when they're getting ready
right.
to come out to their friends and family as the parents of someone who is.
I love those PFLAG folks. Boy, they are just so wonderful.
Amen
and they have lots of good materials to give to people
exactly.
to
so
help them.
We also
and
need to be aware.
There for you.
Yeah, we also need to be aware that when we come out to people who are important to us, that it's probably going to take some adjustment time for them to get used to it.
Exactly. It takes us a while to adjust to it, and then we sort of lay this bombshell on our family members. We can't expect them to accept this or to be right with us the very next day. It's a process.
And sometimes they never are.
Yeah, they come around sooner or later.
Yeah,
well,
yeah. And accepting it is different than just like tolerating it or, you know, knowing about it. According to some members of my family, I came out at my father's funeral, which I told them. I said, well, if they think that was my coming out, then they weren't paying attention. Sometimes you think people have adjusted, and then you find out that they not so much. It's really continues to be a process. No matter how long you have been out. So in the group, would you deal with issues such as coming out as HIV positive?
That could certainly be a topic that we would discuss if someone wanted to bring that up, yes. I mean, because that in and of itself is also part of a coming out type experience.
Right. And if sometimes that is the catalyst for people to have to come out.
Certainly is. I think, Sally, a minute ago you said one of the things is trying to decide when to come out to your family. Another important thing is deciding how to come out to your family.
Mm-hmm. So what would be some ways to do that?
Well, we always, you know, I think one of the best things to do is to be respectful of the other person and their feelings and beliefs, and to do it in an affirming way, but not in a way that you're just cramming it down their throat. You know, you need to be respectful, you need to be gentle, but you need to be firm in what the process is and what's going on in your life.
And And I think most families appreciate it because you are being honest with them, and it removes that barrier that maybe you're holding, you know, them at bay because you're not being your authentic self with them.
Mm-hmm. I remember when I told my mother when I first came out to my mom after, you know, being married for, you know, 8 or 9 years or whatever, and she said that she always sort of knew, that it was something that she didn't acknowledge and she didn't want to, you know, bring up, but in the back of her mind, she always knew. And I honestly feel like most family members, if you're connected to them, if you're close to them, there's a sense of awareness.
Yeah, you hear that a lot.
They're waiting for you.
Well, we were wondering when you were going to tell us.
Right. Exactly.
I wish that was that way. When I one of the things I want to touch on, to help the people who are coming out, mm-hmm. there needs to be, and I know in my own case and in my own therapy for transitioning, was the fact that your family may never accept you. You may lose them entirely. And that's a very difficult situation. You suddenly find you're already isolating because you haven't been able to be honest. And then when you do come out, they turn their backs on you.
That's right. Unfortunately, that happens. It, you know, I would like to think it doesn't happen as often as you hear about, but it does happen. And that's one of the things in this group that we would talk about, is people's fears about what is going to happen when I come out. Mm-hmm. You know, how am I going to deal with that rejection if my family does reject me?
That's also one of the issues that we talk with the Hatch Youth, and that is that if you think that the experience is going to be negative, if you have any concern that your parents are going to throw you out of the house and you'll have no place to live, you know, let's rethink how important it is to come out before you turn 18. And the primary reason for that is because resources are very limited for people under the age of 18 in terms of accessing social services and that sort of thing. There's so...
We always stress that very point on Queer Voices.
Right.
That
so, so much more...
If it's not safe for you, then you can wait. It's there's some other things you might need to do in your life, and there will become a point to where you can go on and live safely.
Yeah, as long
and,
as you've got that roof over your head. And, for some people, that's not an option.
And Jennifer, you say something about your family of choice. So that sometimes when we are rejected by our families,
we have to have a family of choice, a support system, a support group, maybe a few friends.
Mm-hmm.
And to go back, just touch on a moment. If you're transgendered and you come out and they kick you out of the house, there is nothing for you. Nothing.
Nothing.
There are no shelters. Well, there is nothing.
The Montrose Counseling Center, Dr. Mike Harrison, facilitator of the Coming Out Support Group, starting on Thursdays. You can check their website or 713-529-0037. Thank you for being with us. Thank you, Sally. Also tonight on Queer Voices was Christy Claxton with live performance. She'll be Friday the 13th at Sweet Savage Chocolate. Phil Mannard from the Alley talking about culture clash in America, and Jennifer, your wonderful interview.
Yes, Duncan Tucker, the writer and director of Trans America, which opens on the 20th here at the
Angelica.
Thank you.
And thank you so much, Glenn and John, and all of you for being with us tonight on Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 7 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Networks station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, and Jack Valensky, with remote correspondents Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. For more information about guests, events, and organizations mentioned in the show, visit queervoices.org. Some of the music you heard is listed or available on J.D. Doyle's website, queermusicheritage.org. Be sure to listen every Saturday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude.
This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
On Monday, January 16th, 2006, at 7:30 p.m., there will be a screening of the movie entitled The Oppression of Ogoni and a speech by local Nigerian Ogoni activist, Mr. James Naley. The movie will focus on the oppression of the Ogoni and the execution of their leader, Ken Saro-Wiwa. This event will be held at the Black Labrador Pub, located at 4100 Montrose, near Richmond. For more information, please call 713-529-1199. Again, that's 713-529-1199. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
The Dosti Forum is an event for Pakistanis, Indians, and others to come together and to explore their ideas for peace.
The Dosti Forum is an exciting, thought-provoking, educational experience. It is an opportunity to meet with old friends and find new ones as well.
Houston will host its third Dosti Forum on January 22nd at Rice University. It is all volunteer event.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.